because Color the Trails is an initiative aimed at increasing accessibility in the outdoors. Now, Judy is making her way all the way from Burnaby. So we are biding our time here. She's on her way. And in the meantime, we'll get you guys listening to Bombay Bicycle Club. They just released an album called My Big Day 2023, and the MGR and the Vogue Theater would like to invite you all to the performance on May 3rd, 2024. In case you're planning that far in advance, it's 7 p.m., and that's on a Friday. They're touring their new album, and the songs include artists like Chaka Khan and Jay Som. The song you're about to hear is called Taken To, and it features Chaka Khan, American singer known as the Queen of Funk. It's pretty poppy, so look out. Here we go. Oh, all right. I see her. She's coming in. We'll save that song for a little bit later, folks. And what you're about to hear is a true story of resilience. Yeah, come on. Take a seat. Hope the drive wasn't too hectic.
It wasn't bad. It's just like a
little
bit of traffic in there.
Yeah. Nice to meet you. Yeah, nice to meet you, too. We are actually on air.
Oh.
Your mic isn't on yet.
Okay.
There we go. See if you can hear what's going on.
Yes, I
yes?
can hear you.
Great, yeah. Just at about a fist's length away.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Sweet.
Okay, awesome. Well, I've introduced you a little bit.
Okay.
Just your name.
All right.
And a little tiny smidge of what Color the Trails is about.
Okay.
But please take it away with a little introduction.
Yeah.
Maybe where you're from and then... Yeah.
So my name is Judith Kasyama. I'm the founder of Color the Trails. That's based here in Vancouver, but we're also nationwide. So Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, and Montreal. And I was born in Democratic Republic of Congo, but moved around a lot because my family were refugees. So we moved to South Africa, Australia, the United States, and then in 2010, we immigrated to Canada. I currently live in Burnaby. And love the outdoors and Color the Trails honestly is just a community space where we support Black, Indigenous, and racialized communities to access nature in a more affordable way.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you.
So incredible. Yeah. Our spoken word head told me about you guys.
Oh, thank you.
I've been following you on Instagram and your photos are incredible.
Thank you.
Incredible.
That's the courtesy of my partner, Pablo Boyko. So he's like my personal photographer.
Oh my gosh. That's always nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, I guess we can talk a little about what inspired you to start Color the Trails in the first place.
Yeah. So I graduated in 2016, spring 2016. And my background is actually in international development, gender studies, and history. So I spent time in the Middle East, and then when I came back after my studies, I also went to Germany and Poland, studying the Holocaust. And then after that, I wanted to kind of work in the UN. I had a mentor who was supporting me to do a lot of research with the UN and Save the Children, doing a lot of work around child soldiers, especially in the African region, who had to introduce them back into society after they've been, you know, child soldiers. So, so that's kind of like, you know, I was doing that work and it was very heavy. Mm-hmm. And because I wanted to go into diplomacy, it was very heavy as well. I did a lot of work with the UN as well during the Syrian crisis when I was in the Middle East. So I just realized that for me, that wasn't the space that I wanted to be in. It was just too heavy. And I take a lot of things a lot personally, I think, mm-hmm. when it comes to being a refugee, but also the trauma around that. So when I came back to Canada, I started hiking just by myself. By doing that, I just found like nature was very healing for me. And then I started inviting just friends, just be like, come on a hike with me. And then I was managing a coffee shop in Vancouver at that time. So I'll meet a lot of people coming internationally and then we'll make connection with them. And then I'll invite them on a hike. I was like, well, there's really nothing else to do in the city sometimes. So a hike is always a fun thing. And then through that, I just began to see there was like a lack of representation when it came to marketing, especially when I would go to companies to buy gear. I just saw that there wasn't that visible representation. And this is back in 2016. Compared to like what it is now, there wasn't actually much representation on the media. And then I started researching because I felt kind of like I was an anomaly in a sense that I was just this Black woman that enjoyed hiking and spending time in nature. And I was like, there has to be other people like me, right? So that's where just started researching. There was nothing in Canada. Most of the stuff was mostly in the U.S. So that's kind of like where Color the Trails was birthed, as really wanting to create a safe space where I can invite friends to go hiking with me and make friends and find people who were kind of people of color who were interested in the same thing that I was interested in. And then, yeah, and then it just kind of like grew from there, to be quite honest.
That's incredible. Birth from friends. Yeah, no better story.
Yeah. So, yeah, I kind of created it out of selfish intention because it's so hard to make friends in Vancouver. So I was like, by creating this, I'm going to try to make friends.
That is well founded.
Yeah.
I read a little bit about kind of the mentorship piece you guys have. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that a little bit more? Do you often feel like you're the mentor, or do you like assign mentors?
Yeah. So we started Color the Trails just as hiking, just to create accessibility and comfort for people. And then after around 2020, with a lot more support that we got with the BLM movement, we started shifting a lot from just like one-time event to like mentorship. Mm-hmm. And the reason that being is we were creating a lot of opportunity for people to come trying, whether it's kayaking or stand up paddleboarding, but it was like a one-time experience, and that's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. As somebody who studied international development, sustainability is so important in maintaining community, right? So then that's why we started launching our mentorship program. And for me, I think mentorship is just like a beautiful way of all of us sharing our talent and sharing our knowledge with other people. So, so then we first started off with the mountain biking mentorship program in relationship to Essential Cycles that's based in North Vancouver. So what we did was we created a program where we get participants like all of the gear that they need, access to a bike, and then reached out to the greater mountain biking community to have somebody have like a riding buddy. And through that, we were able to foster a relationship, connect people who normally wouldn't connect together. And that's growth. And seeing people like connect, be friends outside of just biking has been really great. Yeah. And then through that, we've been able to also run trail running mentorship, both in Vancouver as well as like Calgary. And now, as of 2024, we're in the process of launching other mentorship because our main focus is land, water, and snow. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have mentorship in those categories.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. So you're the founder of the whole shebang.
Yes.
Are you also the head of the Vancouver division?
No. So I'm more behind the scene. My leadership style is I find the money to support community leaders. So our business structure, the way we are, is that each chapter is run by folks within that community. So folks in Calgary and Edmonton live in that community, communicate with folks in that community, and they get to choose what kind of activities that they're interested in. So Edmonton, most of Alberta, a lot of the work that we do is around hiking, backpacking, even ice climbing, because those are just like very things that people are very interested in the region. Whereas like in Vancouver area, mountain biking, skiing is very big, right? So each chapter have their own interests, and I just try to find partners that want to work with us and help us subsidize those activity within those within all the activities right. that we do. So yeah, so for me, I'm more like, you know, I guess the CEO trying to figure out the money portion. Mm-hmm. But then in Vancouver, we have Lizzie who runs a lot of our events. So okay. like, and then we have Tootie who runs our mountain biking program. So we have, I have different people running different program, and that allows me to give leadership opportunity to other women of color.
Incredible. Yeah. So when I was reading the mission, I saw BIPOC and 2S LGBTQIA plus.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When did that aspect come into play? Was that in your idea from the beginning?
Yeah, that was always from the beginning, because I think sometimes when we think about the queer community, folks kind of like forget that there's an intersectional lens between being Black and being queer or being trans. So like, we wanted to create that space from the beginning, and it was very organic. I didn't have to force it. Folks that come to our community are very gender diverse. So for us, it's just ensuring that we're fostering a community space that's welcoming to everyone. And we have a three-time policy where if you're unable to maintain say people's pronoun as they introduce themselves, you have three warnings. So within the third warning, if you're still not having the correct pronoun, then we have to ask you to leave and do your own work before you can come back into this space. Because for us, we want to ensure that we're respecting all humans and their pronouns, and making sure that we're creating a safe space. Because, you know, I think sometimes we talk about safe spaces, but we don't really take into account the psychological safety of those coming into our space, mm-hmm. or even being accountable as organizers and standing up for what's right. I think sometimes we want to brush things under the rug, mm-hmm. trying to pretend, but Color the Trails is very strict. We're very no BS kind of business. so I'd rather, you know, people hate on me, and for us to maintain our policy and mm-hmm. ensure that there's group safety.
That's very noble. Yeah. Do you guys have like a mission statement that you really stick to, or is it kind of up to the communities to lead in whatever direction?
For us, I think our mission is, or a statement that we live by, is community starts with an invitation. Mm. And that's being said is, you know, it's our job, I think, as a community to invite others into our spaces. You know, we all have something to offer this world. And I think we all have the opportunity to support other people to get into things that we're interested in by creating safe space and giving them also the tools so they can also succeed in those spaces. So for us, it's very much about, we're about community. We're not a discounted business. We try to make sure that, you know, people are not coming to us because we're offering very cheap lessons in mm-hmm. Whistlers and no. things like that. Yeah. We're about community and fostering community. So that's our really mission. And for us, another mission is, you know, where community meets joy. And I think, you know, as a Black activist and a Black founder, joy is an act of resistance. So for us, we really try to make ensure that our space is a joyful space, and that this is the one space where we can just all come as BIPOC and just be in company of one another, but also have the joy of being in company with one another. Because I think there's just so much happening in the world that it can be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And for us, I think there's just a moment of peace and joy that what Color the Trails is really striving to work towards.
Wow. Wow. So do you often get... like, what's your biggest demographic?
Yeah.
Age-wise, gender-wise?
Gender is very diverse. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of queer folks in our communities, mm-hmm. as well as, like, mainly women, I would say. We're still trying to get the fellas to come out. But I don't know what's going on. They think we're too hardcore in terms of what we do.
They're probably so, right.
Because we do respects. Very intense, like, five-day backpacking. Yeah. And sometimes friends are like, they're like, nah, that's too much. Yeah. But age-wise, Color the Trails, we tend to focus 18 and above.
Okay.
The reason being that there's a lot of kids programming, mm-hmm. but there's nothing really once kids, like, age out of those youth program that gives them a space to continue on. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we also noticed was during COVID, a lot of kids program got canceled, right? And a lot of those kids didn't have access to nature because their families didn't have access to nature or didn't know what to do in the outdoors. So the way we're kind of combating that is by giving adults, a lot of these adults in these kids' life, the opportunity to learn to camp, learn to ski, do those things so that they see the value in it and that they can pass that knowledge down. Yeah, yeah. And we're noticing also that such knowledge is not just going down, but it's also going up to like other generations. So we've had folks in their 60s and 70s come and mountain bike with us, which is really cool. So yeah, we're very diverse in terms of age, and we do once in a while run kids programming, but we really make it more of a family affair where we ask parents to come.
Yeah.
We've done bird watching, nature walks, just to make sure that parents are also present and also like learning along the kids. So to make it more inclusive learning.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Has there been a memorable moment with like the few kids programs that you've run?
We did intro to bird watching last summer, and it was really cool because the kids, there's actually like a YouTube video. If you go on Color the Trails on YouTube, there's a video on it. But the kids felt that it was nice for them to come together as kids and hang out and like learn about bird. And they're like, you know, they're like, adults always talk about adult things, but us kids like get to do kids things. So like for me, it's just like really nice to see. While the parents or guardians are bonding, the kids are also bonding.
Yeah.
And, like, they're bonding with other kids that look like them, that are sharing the interests. And, like, and it's just really cool when you sit back and just watch two kids who've, like, never met, how fast friends they become. So it's just, like, really beautiful to see that. So
yeah, no
I think
doubt.
that was really fun.
That's great. So getting more into the events that you guys run now, one that really interests me was Color the Slopes.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's in collaboration with Revelstoke.
Yes.
Is that happening again this year?
Yes. So So Color the Slopes Summit is a 3-day kind of ski summit, ski snowboard, and other winter activities summit.
That monoboard.
You know, anything in the winter, whatever, you'll find something. But it was an idea that I had, and I pitched it to Tourism Revelstoke last year. Just being like, you know, they had a grant, they didn't know what to do with it. I was like, it would be really cool if we work together as a summit to bring a lot of BIPOC folks to Revelstoke, because there's not a lot of diversity in Revelstoke. And they agreed. And then we started this partnership. And so the summit is happening again this year, December 7th through 10th. And we're having speakers come from all over Canada as well as the U.S., and we're just going to be celebrating. So we have ski, snowboarding, snowmobiling, and snowshoeing happening this year, which is like people got to choose what they want to do, and backcountry skiing as well.
Oh,
yeah. And so, you know, and it's like a really great space because it allows people who've never skied to try skiing or snowboarding, but also gives options for people who already do the sport to be able to connect with other people who are in the same kind of level as them. And the reason why I wanted to do a summit like this is because I was getting a lot of feedback from community, not just here in Canada, but also because we have a lot of American folks that follow us, but a lot of people in smaller town be like, I've never skied with another BIPOC before. I've never gone to the backcountry with the other BIPOC before. So Color the Trails kind of offers that space, safe space where people can come and like ski with other people that look like them and just like have fun on the slopes. And then we have like a gala night where you dress up all fancy.
That's
So you can dress up like in your traditional clothing as well. And we just have a DJ that we bring in, and then we just party afterwards and have fun.
As you should.
Yeah.
Awesome. How did the 2022 summit go?
It went really well. So we had over 60 people come, which is like a lot of people.
Wow. Yeah.
It was amazing. We had speaker like Vasu Surjita, who's like a North Face athlete, who's an adaptee skier. And then we had Myrna, who's like an advocate for more diverse bodies in trail running, skiing, you name it. Also the face of Lululemon, seems like. And then there's Carissa Crawford, who's the founder of Future Ancestor out of Alberta, who is another speaker. And that was like really cool to just have such diverse folks speak, share. And we just had fun. So that's why we started the second one, because people just didn't want us to stop. They're like, we need another one because they had so much fun.
That's so cool. Do you have a lot of returners that are looking to come
back? So this year it's like a lot of returners, also a lot of new people, which I think it's really cool to always like draw new folks to the excitement, right? And then all the people that came last year are coming back this year as well. So we're just like really excited. It's 2 weeks away. So right now we're in the last kind of prep, ensuring we have everything, everything ready to go. Which can be stressful when you're planning something 9 months ahead of time. So, but we've had a lot of support. Our team is, you know, we're a very small team. So technically there's like three of us working on this summit, and then a few, and then the rest of the team are helping when they have capacity as well. Right. Yeah.
Okay. And how do you feel about returners? Do you, it's like always an invitation to come back, or are you looking more to reach people who haven't been yet?
I think it's both, because I find like, you know, people returning, they creating and meeting new friends, and then continue to building onto the foundation of Color the Trails. And eventually through those folks who are returning, they're also becoming mentors or, you know, sharing with other people their experience. And then the new folks, I think, is just really cool because the, it allows people to be able to be discomfort. I think sometimes we're too comfortable. So sit in the discomfort of coming somewhere, not knowing people, and then leaving with a bunch of friends afterwards. You know, friends that, you know, even if you're trying like ski or snowboarding for the first time, now you have people that you can go back with, you know, whether you may live in the same city as you. And now you guys can go back and be able to like continue learning skiing together. And that was a testament of last year where a lot of folks that I met continued to ski or snowboard last year as well, this year as well. And they're continuing on that friendship.
Right.
So, yeah.
And is the summit oriented for like the whole, like all of Canada? So all your
chapters? So like, so we try to get, or it's oriented towards all of Canada. We also have a lot of folks from the United States coming up as well. So and then sometimes like there's some people that have like tried to make it from Europe as well. But it just, it hasn't always worked out for them because of scheduling and stuff. And Revelstoke is a hard place to get to. So it makes it a little bit more difficult, but overall, it's been really great to work with tourism because they've been very supportive of this. And not a lot of small towns are open to something like this, but they've been very keen. So that's been thankful for that, too.
That's that's cool. So so they get grants from the government?
Yeah. So last year, so it's in partnership, some grant that they got. And then this year we applied for the festival grant that the BC government released. And then we got some funding from that to help us cover a lot of the costs, the speaker costs, as well as some of the Indigenous. We have Peter White, who goes by Instagram, Peter No White, Not So White. And he is an Indigenous male dancer. So he's going to be performing at the event. So we just try to really be intersectional in everything that we do.
Oh, that's on point. So shifting more to vocabulary and how you guys talk, like BIPOC, how do you feel about that term?
It's a bit of a... We're trying to figure out a good terminology to encompass the diversity of our community. For now, we're just using it as, I think, because I find like the rest of the population are so slow when it comes to diversity equity work. So like BIPOC, I think people know what it is and what it means. So it's just a lot easier to express. But I think the way I always communicate it is Black, Indigenous, and racialized community. And it's, I think it's really important to emphasize the Black and Indigenous portion just because of the disparities that Black and Indigenous people experience, right? And but also taking into account that people of color also experience racism and things like that. So for us, we I just kind of now sticking on it. I know, you know, some organizations and people that I kind of know within the industry are moving more towards people of global majority. But for me, I think it's really important to emphasize Black and Indigenous because I'm also a Black woman who founded it. And my lived experience is going to be very different than a woman of color. So we tend to also say Black, Indigenous, and racialized communities. I think that's also another way of kind of summarizing their terminology there. But you know, language evolve, and we're always open for that involvement as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No doubt. Yeah, because BIPOC, it hasn't been around for that long.
No, it has not. But I think people are catching on.
Definitely.
So then that's why it's easier to say BIPOC, mm-hmm. because then people understand what it is. Whereas I think if we come up with new terminology, it's going to require more to get back to it. So, but internally, we're all very aware. And for us, it's really, you know, to continuously work within the Black, Indigenous, and racialized community to mm-hmm. access those spaces.
Yeah, no doubt. Speaking now about your film involvement,
mm-hmm.
obviously there's a lot more to unpack with Color the Trails, which I plan to do. But Like Me, Outdoor Edition, that series.
Yes.
Incredible.
I came across it
on your website. It looks so cool.
Can you
talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So like I said earlier, I started Color the Trails because of the lack of media representation. So part of what we do is create our own content. So mm-hmm. all of the content on our website,
high quality,
our page. Quality content. So, you know, it's not tokenistic or anything. So anything we do, any form of marketing with brands, we ensure that our communities are being paid and being paid above whatever the average day rate is, just to ensure that we're being equitable. And not only that, we also have a cohort of BIPOC photographers and videographers that we work with as well. So we really ensure that we're spreading the wealth within our own community, but also giving a lot of the BIPOC folks opportunity to represent Color the Trails and give them job opportunities as well. So that aspect of media representation is essential. So then during film festivals, there's a lot of film festivals out there, but I still find when it comes to diversity and inclusion, there's a sector in which there's diversity film on the side, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to search for it in order to be able to watch it. So the Like Me Film Festival is a 5-part film festival that we do. It starts off by Black History Month with Black Like Me Outdoor Edition. And then we moved to Indigenous Like Me Outdoor Edition, Fat Like Me Outdoor Edition, and Disabled Like Me Outdoor Edition, and Queer Like Me Outdoor Edition. So our hope is through those film festivals, we really hone in into the intersectionality of all of our identity that's mm-hmm. within our community and showcase those stories and give folks the opportunity to have conversation with leaders within those industry to share and give them the platform to share what it means, you know, to live within those intersectional lenses mm-hmm. and share that from that perspective. So that's what we're kind of doing. It's very difficult to run a film festival. So
no doubt.
So it's a little bit of work and tiresome. But now that we have a good team on board that I'm working with, so it just makes things a lot easier.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the content of the films go, mm-hmm. is it mostly surrounding one individual and their story?
No. So we, for Black Like Me, so we find a series sometimes of 5 films that touches on a topic of being Black in the outdoors. And then through that, we'll find 3 speakers and then we'll have a theme. Like the past 2 years, we had theme of Black within the environmental, what it means to be Black within the environmental movement, mm-hmm. right? So we had that. And then this year, this coming year, we're not sure yet what the theme is. So we'll have a theme around that. And then we'll bring experts to kind of share on that theme. So
that's really unique.
Yeah. So, so it's always going to be based on themes each year. So, yeah.
Right. And what kind of movies have you found in the past?
I'm having very hard time memories.
Oh, no. All good.
There's a film on YouTube that you can actually watch. It's called National Brotherhood of Skiers. And it's an organization, a nonprofit organization out of the U.S. It's a ski club that started just after the civil rights movement to get Black folks on ski resort. So they're sharing their history. So they just celebrated their 50th anniversary, I think, last year. So it's been around for 50 years. And that's that kind of film that we've shown. We've also shown our own little films that we've done as well within that film festival, just kind of highlighting the importance of community or highlighting a specific thing that, that we've done. So, right. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, we're coming up on 8:30, mm-hmm. and I'm obligated by law to play some ads.
Okay, sounds good.
So I'm going to do that, okay. and we can have a little break here.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
I want to let go and forget. 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 I want to be your only bet. 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 I want to be your only.
Welcome back to Outdoor Pursuits on CITR 101.9 FM. We're jumping back into a conversation with Judith Kasiyama, founder of Color the Trails. And while we were breaking, we were just talking about shared love of mountain biking.
Yes.
Shared love of flow,
yeah.
Although lack of speed, moderation,
yeah.
Ability.
I'm sure it's just too technical. I get tired.
It's tiring.
I need to work on my speed, so I have to go elsewhere.
Yeah, and then you can combine them, yeah. Become ultimate pro.
Shredder,
yeah. Yeah, that's the dream. That's yeah. The dream. So what kind of experience did you have in the outdoors prior to starting Color the Trails?
I would say because I grew up in DRC, in Democratic Republic of Congo, just like being out in nature at a young age, that's I think has always been, that's the experience I carry in terms of just like being out there. But in terms of like outdoor nature pursue anything, to be honest, I came in blank. Like, I actually, before we immigrated to Canada, it was like the 2010 Olympics that was happening in Vancouver. And, my mom, in order to get us excited to move to Canada, cause we were not excited because we were leaving all of our friends and the community we've built there, had us all watching the Winter Olympics. And I don't know, just something in me, I was like, I want to do what those people are doing, you know, when we're watching skiing or snowboarding. And I'm like, oh, like I just fell in love with the city, just and the access to nature that was being portrayed. So I didn't know how to do any of those sports or those activities at all. But I just kind of pursued it just out of interest. And now I'm a skier and I'm a mountain biker and yeah. I do backpacking and I'm slowly getting into mountaineering because
right.
I'm very
yeah,
fascinated.
I was gonna ask. Yeah.
Yeah, fascinated by that. So for me, I think, especially being a Black woman, not seeing people in these spaces doing these activities, you kind of feel like you're an imposter because like there's not that visual representation, right? You can't be something that you can't see. So for me, I've kind of like, I didn't see it and I'm being it. And I think, I hope that other Black women see it and also feel encouraged to try it. Mm-hmm. And like, and it's not something that you need to start when you're like 2 years old. Because yeah, like people who grew up here started skiing in diapers and never be as good at them. But for me, I want to be good enough so I can get down the mountain safely and not hurt myself.
Yeah. Not everyone can do that.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving to summer stuff here, do you have a similar summit as like, is there a Color the Trails summit?
No, like a lot of people have been asking to do something in the summer, but it takes so much mental energy to facilitate that I think that we're going to wait, and see, but also growing capital because a lot of it is us trying to build sustainable economy as well, making sure that we have the finances and everything. So nothing yet for the summers, but in the summertime, we run amazing programs throughout Canada. So we have our mountain biking mentorship runs from the fall to the spring. So like from September to like May. And then folks can ride all summer long if they want to. And then, but during the summer, we do a lot of backpacking trip. Like this past summer, we did Mount Assiniboine. So we started like in the Calgary side, hiked into BC side, and then finished on the, Alberta side.
Yeah.
Into BC and then back into Alberta. So that was really cool. And we did a 5-day mountaineering trip out in Alberta as well, in Bow Hut. And that was like 12 BIPOC folks, a lot of people have no experience in mountaineering, and we had two ACMG certified guides, like, helping us walk through glacier, traverse glacier. Now that I have that skill, I can actually traverse glacier without them, because I know how not to tie ropes, how not to fall in a glacier, or how to look, you know, fall into a crevasse, learning how, you know, how do you walk through crevasses. So, like, it's just these skills and this knowledge that I think a lot of our community lacked, and it looks really intimidating, but once you start taking lessons and courses on it, it's actually not that hard. But it's just like that willingness, I think, to try something different and do something different that's not most popular opinion.
No doubt. Yeah. So thinking about, like, courses and things like that, do you often get people who are not from the BIPOC community coming to, I know you mentioned some people coming to look for cheaper ski lessons or whatnot. Do you often face that?
Thankfully, no. People are very respectful of the space we've created. Sometimes people accidentally sign up, and then later they read the description. They're like, oh, I actually don't qualify. And they'll just, like, unsign themselves. But we do always open space. We do some of our event, we open it up to our allies. So it's like people who know our community and respect our community who come forward. But in terms of, like, hiring people, like, guides, sadly enough, there's not a lot of BIPOC guides out there. And that's something that we've applied for some grants through the government. I hope we get it, to get more BIPOC folks certified to become guides. Because there's, in all of Canada, I know one Black woman who's a climbing guide that does, that works with us out in Alberta. And then I know one person who's, I believe they're Iranian or Middle Eastern, who's also a ski tour guide. And then I know a few Indigenous guides that we've been able to work with. But that's, like, all in Canada. And then this year I got certified as level one kayak instructor with Paddle Canada. And through their statistics, there's over 5,000 guides of kayakers. And out of that 5,000, there's 50 who are BIPOC. And out of that 50, I think there's less than 20 or whatever who are women. And and then out of that, if you break it down to, like, racialized folks, there's not a lot of Black women. I think I was one of the very few Black women who is certified kayak instructor, right? So there's, like, statistically, if we're going to talk about tourism and guiding, there's not a lot of diversity in that space. And it's very sad, because I'm trying, Color the Trails is trying to change that narrative. And I find, like, those in position of power and money don't want it to change in some ways, because they don't really want to fund us. And they don't want to fund us because we're not a nonprofit. And I think that's another conversation of its own. I don't believe you have to be a nonprofit to do good. I think you can do a, you can be a business and do good. So we're a business, but we run like a nonprofit or like a social enterprise. All of our events are subsidized. So for us, there's a way in which we can be creative and break the system without having to be so dependent on the system. Because for us, we're looking about sustainability. If something's not sustainable, it's not going to maintain long, right? Because funding is going to dry up and things like that. So
Well, you sound like a trailblazer.
I don't know. I think I'm just me living life and seeing things differently and trying to imagine the world a little bit better than what is being given to us, and encouraging people to look outside the box. You don't have to do things the way people are doing it, right? Like, for me, I thought I wanted to do diplomacy, but then I found success in creating my own business. And being able, in the process, being able to bring other Black women and women of color into the space to also build their leadership capacity, right? So I think that, you know, there's no wrong way of doing life. I think you just have to follow your passion and establish really strong boundaries around that. And, you know, trust your gut. And I think that's, like, the best thing you can do for yourself instead of trying to please other people.
So you went to school in Langley, is that
Yes.
At Trinity Western.
I went to Trinity Western.
What was that experience like?
It was interesting. I went to Trinity mainly because of the educational component of it. I didn't really care about the religious aspect of the university. And there was a professor there that I actually scoped out, and I wanted to be her friend.
Successful?
Yeah, successful. Yeah. We like do Christmas every year together. Really good friend and mentor. So for me, because I was, at that time, my goal was I wanted to do a master's or PhD in history. So I was like, okay, this is like a professor I want to befriend, going to write me a recommendation. Mm-hmm. Like that was my view. So yeah, like the educational component of it was amazing. I got really... I'm an introvert, and I got the support that I needed being a smaller classroom, and also a lot of support as well from the, my professors and understanding. And then also having the freedom to be able to, because like I think by the time of my last semester, I was mostly in all director studies because I was focusing more on African studies. And I was just doing self-directed courses. So it gave me a lot of that flexibility. And then through there, I was also able to study in the Middle East with the same, like pay the same amount of money to go study in the Middle East. So I was studying Arabic, Islam, culture, and we were able to visit a lot of places. Such I was living in Amman, but we were able to travel to Morocco, Istanbul, Israel, Palestine. Wow. So I had a very unique experience in terms of my education, and I'm forever thankful for that because it opened my eyes in a lot of things and see things a lot more differently.
Yeah. Yeah, it must have been really refreshing to get to go abroad from a place like Vancouver.
Where... Yeah, yeah. And it was like, and it was awesome. Like, I loved living in Amman, Jordan. I was getting really good at Arabic. by the time I left, I could like bargain in a market, can take a taxi anywhere, and all in Arabic. I'm good at picking up languages as long as I'm in the country like there's no English. Like, I can pick up language very fast. So that was like a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed my time there. And then I also was working a lot with the Syrian refugees who were coming through the Jordan border there. So that was like a really cool experience, and I think that me focusing more on my education and being in a smaller school allowed me to do that, but as well as like being in Langley was not my favorite because I also experienced a lot of racism out there as well.
Yeah. What was the outdoor environment like at Trinity Western?
I don't think that was, I remember going like cross country skiing at Trinity once with the Outdoors Club, but that was just it. Like there wasn't really much of a club, I would say, or a pursuit to like make it it was just, I don't know. It was there, but there wasn't much. Okay. But it did present me with the ability, because of how close to nature it was, to like be able to go trail running.
Just go on your own.
Yeah, yeah. Just do things like close by on my own. And even during that time, I started training to start doing half marathons and stuff like that. So, and there's a really great hills out there to practice going, you know, when you're practicing for marathons. But otherwise, yeah, like for me, I got very good education, and I'm still friends with a lot of my professors, which I think for me was the most valuable thing when I went into university.
Yeah, that's great. So we're just coming up on 5-ish more minutes of our chat.
Oh, it's been great. Time is flying.
I know. It's crazy. And I was curious what tips you had for UBC. There's surf club, there's the ski and board club, there's the varsity outdoor club, there's a huge variety, but I look around, all the executives are white for all the clubs. Most of the trips end up being mainly white. What advice do you have for them?
For me, as somebody who's kind of grown up internationally, I'm always like, you have to look around. If there's just people that look like you, you need to diversify, right? So for me, it's like, what is students or student bodies at UBC doing to encourage and foster safe spaces so that students of color here feel welcome. Mm-hmm. All these activities, all these sports are very, very intimidating. So, like, are you offering introductory courses? Are you partnering with the Black Students Association of mm-hmm. UBC? You know, like, what are you doing to, like, you know, reach these demographic? And are you coming in as a potential partner, or are you coming in as like, oh, we're going to teach you what to do kind of mm-hmm. thing? Like, you know, your approach has to be very intentional mm-hmm. and it has to be equitable. Don't come in with like white saviorism. Mm-hmm. Come in with like, hey, we want to share this love that we have with you. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's my advice is. And if you can't do that, then find an organization you can partner with mm-hmm. and then start that way and just start with basics, right? Just like get people to feel comfortable enough to be outside and then figure out what are the barriers. Sometimes mm-hmm. a lot of people assumes barrier to the outdoors for a lot of BIPOC community is financial, when in reality, when we do service within our own organization, it's not finances oftentimes. It's safety and mm-hmm. finding a community to do things safely with.
Yep.
And I think sometimes people kind of forget about safety and just be like, oh, it's a financial issue. Sometimes that's not an issue at all. It's about like, is this space safe for me to mm-hmm. come and be authentically Black, or are you going to police my Blackness? Mm-hmm. Right? So yeah, my advice is learn and reach out to organization and see if you can partner up and do something as simple, just like there's amazing trails around here. Do something as simple as that.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
I think that's great advice. Yeah, because I found myself, I helped organize a trip mm-hmm. Through the VOC.
Yeah.
Whitewater Kayaking, mm-hmm. Introduction to Whitewater Kayaking. If you're looking for partners, yeah. River Culture Kayaking in Squamish, if okay. you're ever looking to get yeah. on the rivers, I would highly
Sweet.
Recommend. But just even folks who signed up,
yeah,
the majority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then things like that, too, is like also there's a lot of BIPOC folks who can't swim. So like mm-hmm. that's also like another factor. Right. Mm-hmm. So you really have to learn and understand the cultural differences mm-hmm. Before you can bring people into the outdoors, because even we take people camping and people do that. But for a lot of us who are Africans or refugee, our parents are like, why are you going camping? Like,
you have a house.
We left a life of yeah. hardship. So there's a house and all this. Like, why are you going camping? So like sometimes people don't want to do camping, but then we found like going on cabins and huts. Mm,
yeah.
People love huts.
I love it.
Yeah. So now we do a lot of hut trips as well, right? And we're part of the ACC, Alpine Club of Canada.
Oh, so nice.
To access,
that's
a,
yeah.
Yeah, to access some of the huts. And that's like our most sold out program. So
yeah.
So it's just like you got to work with the community and also listen to the mm-hmm. concerns of the community and let the community lead you versus you leading them.
Yeah. Invitation.
Invitation. Yeah. Extend that invitation.
Great. Okay. Well, do you want to close with any comments?
No comments at all. But just like, I just want to say thank you, Jade, for having
thank you so much.
Me here
I'm
to
so
share.
Honored. About-